My name is Terry. I'm an addict. And,
hi, Terry.
You know, people talk about Jimmy being the flame. You know, I look at Jimmy as the wick that went through the whole Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And, like, I met him over the phone, and I would talk to him all the time. And in New York, when we started NA, he helped us immensely. And he was a man of integrity and love, and, like, he had such a passion for addicts and people recovering, and his vision of a worldwide fellowship was amazing. You know, and I remember when they threw me off the New York region, you know, and I was the alternate RSR, and then I called up Jimmy, and I said, Jimmy, they threw me off the region. He started laughing. And, like, I was like, really pissed off. And I said, what are you laughing at, you know? And then he says, I don't feel so all alone, you know, because Jimmy got thrown off the, he was locked out of the World Service Office. And for me, it was a black period in Narcotics Anonymous. And I really think people should know about this. You know, there's a lot of bodies buried out there, and there's a lot of people that got a lot of time that were involved in it. A lot of people that didn't make amends for what they did, you know, and like Bill said, like, right after that, Jimmy's, like, immune system went down and died of cancer. It, like, broke his heart, man. That man was in a lot of pain, you know, and for the way some people treated him, it was disgraceful, you know, and I guess I'm just bringing this up so maybe something like this will never happen again in Narcotics Anonymous. And there's a lot of manipulation and a lot of people in control and moving the office to Georgia and just a lot of backhanded stuff. And it's part of our history, and nobody wants to ever talk about it. They just, like, want to sweep it under the carpet like it never happened, you know. And he didn't deserve one bit of that. You know, he was here. Man, I remember calling him at all times, and Jimmy was there, and he always had he was always upbeat, and he always had something to say. And I remember I was the program chair for the 13th World Convention, and I called him up and asked him for contacts. And like, hey, wait a minute, and he got me a phone number from Scotland, he got me a phone number from Australia. So I was calling all these people all over the country, you know, and it's just, he helped a lot, man, you know. He was just such a great man. And one time I was nuts. I mean, I was totally nuts. Something about service and traditions, violations. Somebody's doing something in New York, and I called up Jimmy, and he says, Terry, just sit back and watch the cartoons, you know. And from that day on to this day, every once in a while, I just sit back and watch the cartoons. And I think of Jimmy a lot, you know, and he inspired me a lot, you know, to do what I do because, you know, I have a love for this fellowship, you know. And the man was, like, he knew, you know, like, he would just, like, put me in contact with people and like Bill said, I mean, pick up conversations. You would talk to him, like, 3 months before, and he'd pick it up just where it was, and he'd remember who you were talking about, what the conversation was about. He was just like, you know, and he loved to talk. A lot of times when I call him up, I just start talking, because I knew as soon as he got his word in, that was it, man. He just, you know, Jimmy, please, shut up. You know, but he was my hero. You know, when I used to talk to him, I envisioned this man, like, 6'2", like John Wayne, this, like, powerful figure, you know, my hero. And when I finally got to meet him, he was this little skinny guy, but his spirit was big as John Wayne, and just his love and how he affected people, you know. I don't think I could ever repay the man for what he's given me. And I remember when he was going in for an operation to get his lung scraped, and he called me up and he was saying his goodbyes, and it just tore me up. I remember walking around the streets of New York, I was just crying, and then I just called him back, and I says, no, I says, I'm coming out to see you, and by the time I get back, got out to L.A., it was, he died, and we were having a service, you know, and I used to call him up, man, and I'd call him up with stolen credit cards, and I'd say, Jimmy, if the phone company calls you, you don't know who you're talking to. He said, okay. You know, but he would never tell me I was doing something wrong. He would let me figure it out for myself sooner or later. But he was like so cool, man. You know, he was a blessing to Narcotics Anonymous. Like, he kept us going. You know, and I just feel bad what happened to him. You know, and I hope nothing like that ever happens again in this fellowship. You know, and it should be a part of our history. And people don't want to hear it, that's too bad. You know, if they never made their amends, too bad. You know? That's it. Thanks.
Yeah, at the risk of repeating some things over again, because you said the button was pushed, there were things to say that we felt needed to be said. So if I said it before and it's on the tape, I guess God wants you to hear it again because he was that kind of man. You see, you cannot expound too much about Jimmy Kennan. He was a man of high principle, integrity. He was a man of vision. He was the one and only founder of Narcotics Anonymous. He was not a co-founder. He had that uncanny ability to have this memory, whether it was 3 months or 5 years later, to pick up the conversation. So it is those people that Terry alluded to that used to refer to him as the old man, and that he was senile. Hey, they were out to lunch, man. I think they did it one too many or something, you know, because they definitely did not know the man. This man was uncanny. I mean, he was of high ethics, high principles. He had a way of delivering that. He didn't come down to finger pop or to try to pretend to be a man of the streets in order to make you understand. He had that uncanny ability of talking at a high level, but making you understand what it was that he was saying. You know, in other words, he wanted you to be part of that, like water seeks its own level. He wanted you to join him in this spirit. You see, he didn't want to go down and finger pop and shoot dope with you, you know. You know, and, you know, he was a man that obviously practiced what he preached. If there was any one man in my life that I'd like to emulate and be like, it was like him. I don't see how that would entirely be possible. I'd have to almost get Christ-like. I'm not saying he was the Christ or anything like that, but the Christ did say, greater things you can do than I, and he dropped that lug on mankind. So there's been a few people at different times in history that have done great and wondrous things. He was obviously an instrument of God and high principle. And he gave us this wonderful program of principles. I used to ask him, I hope you're hearing this part for the second time, that I'd say, Jimmy, what is Narcotics Anonymous? He'd say, it's a set of principles written so simply that even I can apply them in his life. And that was the 24 principles, the 12 steps, and the 12 traditions. Because if you read the first half of the first tradition, it says, personal recovery depends on. If you have any inclination that you'd like to hang around a while and have some effective changes in your life, if those words, personal recovery depends on, then I suggest you take it a little further and study those traditions and those steps, and you'll find out where your personal recovery is. You will find that you will be introduced to this spirit within yourself as you understand it. Because 12 steps, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message. So obviously this man had that experience, and he carried the message. Yes, he was the wick. And I think he was also the substance, the candle wax, and the light. You know what I mean? He was the whole thing. Jack said, he be the man, you know. And anybody that thinks that, anybody that thinks that there was something, again, and I want to reiterate this again, if it was on the tape, great, you need to hear it again. This is only about, from 1953 on, Narcotics Anonymous as we know it today. Any other prior efforts, they don't mean nothing. They have nothing to do with us. They're a violent, we bring it into our program, be it a history conference, or where two or more are gathered, and we yada, yada, yada about it, we're breaking our personal traditions, you know. It's not, see, we can have all the controversy we want within the fellowship of our own program and still be within the fellowship and the spirit and the principles. But if we bring in outside controversy and other things, it has no part, place, no part in our program. So for God's sakes, if you be a member of this program, or want to be a member of this program, take it from whence it came, 1953 till now, you know? And because obviously the works don't fix it. I personally have watched this fellowship grow from 50 to 100 people. I sat in a room in San Diego with somewhere between 25 and 50,000 clean and sober addicts from all over the world this last 4th of July. So there's got to be at least 3 million of us throughout the world. Now this is the true pyramid. It's not the scam. Because if we got 3 million, each one of them is going to go out there and get 10 in their lifetime. They want to change to 30 million. This is the fastest growing thing. The 12-step philosophy is the fastest growing, fastest moving spiritual movement in all of the history of mankind. And Kenan was obviously a unique instrument in this happening, you know. God was obviously moving through him, with him, for him, and as you can see from a dream, a vision, look at us today. We wouldn't be here doing this interview today. I would not have 36 years of sobriety, you know. My old reprobate friend Jack here from as many years ago, I know he wouldn't have been here. He was pretty fucked up. But then again, he said yesterday, hey, you say it. How do you say that? You were talking about how I wasn't wrapped so tight in those days. What was the term you used?
You remember.
No, I don't remember. That's why.
I don't remember either.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, it was
getting old thing.
Yeah,
it was a moment.
Yeah. You know, maybe I got the Alzheimer's. It certainly wasn't Jimmy Kennett, I'll tell you that. But yeah, I wasn't reptile in those days, and neither were any of us, you know. We were hell-bent on a path of destruction, you know. And thank God for this program and what he brought to us, you know. And shame on you if you were part of the coup. Huh?
The coup
that threw him out, because I know, but I don't have enough time to list the names. But there's a few dirty rats out there, you know, and they need to hang themselves and get down on their knees and pray and work the steps and ask God for forgiveness, you know what I mean? Get with their sponsors, work the principles, and be relieved of their transgressions, you know, because there were those for their own personal agendas, their own personal quest for power, prestige, money, whatever it be. And there's some of it still going on today. They want to steal our information from our program and write their books and make personal money on it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, shame on you. If you wanted to make money that quick like that, go buy a lottery ticket. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Back to, quickly about the controversy that led to his dismissal from the world. Yeah, in your sense, do you think he knew what was coming and what was going to be the eventual outcome to the controversy?
Absolutely not.
None.
Absolutely.
He was blindsided.
Yeah.
See, he went to open the office.
It was a slap in the face, man.
And he had changed the locks. Didn't say anything to him.
Nobody told him anything. And there was some people that were very close to him that if you look at the parable or the Christian story, I mean, there obviously was a Judas, maybe more than one. And those are the people that I was alluding to say, shame on you, because they need to rectify their actions and let whatever their transgressions were go.
Yeah, people were outraged. You know, I got copies of letters from some of the Board of Trustees, Judge Buckley, Fawn, you know, they're just totally outraged. And it was just sneaky and underhanded. You know, and, it devastated the man. It really did. I mean, man, there was a lot of pain in it. You know, and, like I said, you know, a lot of them never made amends. You know, and today, you know, they walk the walk, and they talk the talk, but, you know, they don't walk the walk. A lot of them got a lot of time, and they're around. There's something here this weekend. You know, and some of them are fanatics, and every organization got fanatics. You know, like Bill said, people have their own agenda. You know, some people wanted to take over the office for money, property, and prestige. It was a time when the basic text was printed and people had visions of a lot of money. They wanted to move it to down south, and there was like contingencies for Southern California, Georgia, and it was just like, it was like a covert operation. And I know the woman who made the motion at the World Service Conference, and to this day, she is, it bothers her because she was duped. She was duped by somebody to make the motion and somebody seconded it. You know, and back then, it was like, well, it was cutthroat and backstabbing. You know, and for what, like I said, for Jimmy did, he didn't deserve that. You know, nobody deserved that.
In his wildest imagination, he would not have conceived that that would have ever happened. You see, I mean, here was a man that gave freely of his time, his money. And he was a fan, you know. Maybe one of the things that's part of the answer to the last question, but Jimmy the man. Jimmy was like on disability for many years. And I met him, he was so sick, and that was many years ago. He thought he had emphysema. It turned out he had TB. But Christ, he would take one step forward and two back. He'd come to my barber shop. It was an adventure to watch him walk from the front door to the
chair.
To the chair. It was like, holy shit, is he going to make it? You know, right? And here's a guy that's suffering like that, and he's carrying on and giving of himself freely and spiritually, and opening his door at night. He had a family, and the family had to have been bothered by all these late night adventurers that would find themselves at that little side back door, never to be turned away, always to put the coffee pot on, put the little bowl of candies and cookies out, and let's talk, you know. And like Terry had said, once you started, oh my God. It wasn't, you know, one thing I like to clean up for you, because you said, tell him, say, hey, Jimmy, shut up. It wasn't meant in a negative form.
Yeah.
It was all about, "Hey man, you're burning my brain cells. Like, you gave me so much program, now I gotta go for a month somewhere and process it and put it into action, you know." You'd be begging him, "Please stop."
He gave the day he died.
Yeah.
He was still giving. And this hospital room, the whole side of the wall was cards from everywhere. You know, people love that man.
And there was a person that was very, very close to him. Maybe this person's going to hear this thing and not like it, but I'm not going to mention any names.
But we know
but
who
I,
it is.
But I venomously exposed this guy to Jimmy, but Jimmy loved him. He sponsored him. He went on and on and on about this, you know what I mean? And he made me and his deathbed promise to stop fighting with him, for him to stop fighting with me. But at least the one point of decency is that, you know, we did do that. We stopped our fight, and we stopped our transgressions. And like I said, the guy was, he was uncanny. He always remembered my birthday. He said, "I'm going to be here on your birthday." He waited on my birthday to die. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But I kind of like to look at it like an omen, you know, that he was a man of his word.
That's true.
Yeah, and that's how much his word meant, that he would lay there and suffer for 6 or 7 or 10 more days just in order to keep his word. That's the way I do it. And the other thing I want to say, because I have heard people in the program say that, he was loaded on morphine. Hell, man, let me tell you something. I looked at that man. They were pumping so much morphine into him, it was running out of his skin like water. And you couldn't touch his consciousness. He was lucid. He was vibrant. He was connected to something beyond and beyond. He was there, just like the chemicals couldn't touch him. It was uncanny. So never let it be said that he was in some kind of morphine delirium, you know what I mean? Yeah, never. Never, never, never. It couldn't even touch his consciousness. He was right there to the end. Bingo.
What do you think was his vision?
Exactly what's happening today.
Worldwide fellowship.
Worldwide fellowship.
No eyes may die seeking recovery anywhere on this planet. That our literature should be translated into every language. That everybody has a chance for this message. In his life. That's what his vision is coming about.
That it is.
No matter what they did to Jimmy, they can never change his vision. They can never change what the effect he had on this planet. Never. You know, all the things saying that, like he was a senile old man. Man, he was on the ball all the time. That man was intelligent all the time. And just what he's done for so many people. And it's like, with his help, he was breathing life into human. We were like human garbage. He brought us back to life. He helped recycle us. Made us be productive human beings. Made us be caring human beings, you know? People were like, you know, you steal your mother's TV and run down the street. Now today you're bringing in meetings to penitentiaries or detoxes. Jimmy helped us turn our lives around. You know, that's his legacy, his miracle. His miracle is service and giving to addicts whenever, wherever. all the time.
See, and you have to remember also that, you see, this man used to come to the fellowship. The fellowship was small. It was tiny. It would fit in a thimble. You know? He would appeal to the people, please come and help me answer letters. Please come and help me stuff envelopes. Please come and help me answer telephone. He was the World Service Office for decades. And then as the fellowship began to grow a little bit, when they finally declared addiction to be an illness and not a crime, because, you see, it was a felony for two addicts to talk together. They went to prison. That's what held the fellowship back. But suddenly now there was this change. And so people would write for literature. Christ, he had stuff stacked from the floor to the ceiling in 17 places. Request, please send me this, please send me that. The telephone was ringing 24 hours a day. And he gave every ounce, every minute, every second of his time. And these people had the audacity to steal this and want to take this away and to call him senile, ineffectual. They were the lazy bastards. They didn't go there. They didn't stuff the fucking envelopes. You know what I mean? They left that little old man over there to do it all by themselves, except occasionally somebody. And that's why he loved the people that helped him so much. You see, because he wanted that vision. He wanted that growth. The reason why it took a long time for the literature to be sent out was like, hey man, there's 10,000 requests and one guy trying to stuff envelopes to do it. And we didn't even have money for envelopes. He had to go around somewhere and find somebody, some discarded envelopes and cross things out. And man, you know, it took time. He had to go and look for cardboard boxes in the dumpster so he could put your goddamn literature in it and mail it to you. See? And then I had some people that come over here and I saw one thing that blew my mind. The guy says he was the one that was instrumental in getting the basic text. What a bunch of crap. The rest of whatever his thing said was true. But the guy was not the one that called for the basic text. Jimmy Cannon called for the basic text years and years before. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been like, hey, let's put literature together. Let's put a pamphlet together. It was all moving towards the book for years and years and years. It wasn't about any Johnny come ladies coming, you know what I mean? Right? And those things, yeah, I can't help it. Yeah, I am a Jimmy supporter, man. Because, you know, I'd be dead. I'd be in prison the rest of my life. I would not be here today if it wasn't for that man. I owe him my life. I owe all the people that were here. See, the one thing that's unique about our program is that they have a part of these principles before personalities, you know. That's part of the traditions. Hey man, we had people that were diametrically opposed to all kinds of stuff, you know? But it was like, I don't know if you ever played that little game when you were a kid, hide and seek, but you couldn't finally catch the last guy, so you holler, holly, holly, oxen free, you know, right? Well, we may be having our wars, but, you know, we have to call up and say, hey, Hank or Jim or John or Mary or whoever it was, man, I want to, and you know what? They get in the car and come over and get you. They spend the day with you. They would have been. There's no treatment centers to take anybody to or to pass the buck to, you know what I mean? Like that.
We didn't have any
treatment. That man led by example. That's why this fellowship is where it is today. You see? We exemplify the growth of Narcotics Anonymous today as we see it exemplifies this man's persona. And anybody that thinks that it was any other effort, hey man, go take a swan dive off on the Bay Bridge.
Jack, we missed your part on the first question. Could you say something about that again on that in regards to the first question, which was what was your impression of Jimmy really as he was as a man?
Sure. I'm an addict named Jack. And I could do it briefly. I could say ditto to both what Bill said and Terry said, and that would suffice and be complete. I remember the first time that I met Jimmy was in 1966. I was sick. I went to the meeting, and he was very encouraging to me. He told me some things that I'll never, ever forget. He told me, for one, that I never had to use again, even if I wanted to. Even if I wanted to, I never had to use again. And that sounded like, would you know, you old fart? You know, and that was my attitude time. Because I went there looking to go cock with somebody that was at the meeting, and I went there looking for somebody to talk to a parole officer, and it was raining outside, it was cold, and they didn't want me in the Greyhound bus station anymore, because that's where I was living for the most part. And so he was warm and loving and encouraging and told me that I never ever had to live that way again, that if I didn't use between meetings, I wouldn't get loaded, and that nobody could ever take the seat that I was sitting in, that I owned it, that I didn't earn it, that it was mine, period, that you don't earn admittance to Narcotics Anonymous, because I have a sponsee that he and Jimmy were real close, and he said, well, how do you earn something that's so beautiful, man, it's so loving, it's so giving, you know, it's like, it's a gift, and it's not about earning it, you know, like, you do X, and you get Y, you know, it's just not that. But in the same respect, we paid our dues to get to a point of desperation where we're going to ask for help. And he had, like everybody else, had phenomenal reserves. You know, that when he'd be sick as a dog, he would be able to call on these reserves. He would continue to answer the phone, continue to write letters. He would continue to be there for somebody that came by the side door, man, and in the middle of the night or the morning or right after he went to sleep, somebody come by and wake him up, you know, and he was there and he was alert and he cared. And that spirit is the spirit that carried people on. And we didn't have a whole lot of literature like we have today that we can read. We had a couple of IPs and we had a pamphlet, finally, that we could put in our back pocket, and it went through several iterations of itself, and then they got to where they can put some stories in there, some addicts that were clean, some of which are included in the basic text today, and some of those stories are changed when some people in the world decided that language was not appropriate for whatever the reason was, and they didn't consult the people whose story was being changed. And they said, well, it's just a minor thing, and this is a new language, and Narcotics Anonymous and all that. And Jimmy was not about all that. It was these people that Johnny come lately, as I call them, even though some of them had a lot of clean time, is they wanted to sanitize, or whatever they were trying to do, our literature, you know. And as I said earlier today, I said that was a very painful period of time for me, you know. And it was during our real growth spurt for Narcotics Anonymous, and all these, a lot of different things were going on. But I remember Jimmy saying it, Bill mentioned it earlier, man, if it's not spiritual, it's not practical.
I heard those words about 1,000 times from Jimmy, applying to all kinds of situations. It's not practical, Jack. It's not spiritual. So if you want to be spiritual, you know, you better make sure what you're doing is practical. And I can't make that decision for you. You got to make your own decision. I said, it wouldn't work for me, but, you know, it may work for you. I don't know. But he didn't. He was not ever demeaning to people. And people that just were flat burned him, man. He always had something good to say about him. And he knew, he believed in the basic spiritual thing that every human being has. And that's the right to be forthright and honest and at peace with themselves and with others. He believed that was possible. And he believed that, I remember in the late 60s, when we would talk about maybe someday we wouldn't have to get the big book of AA and cross out there where it said alcohol, we'd put in drugs, or we'd put in addiction, or everything referred to alcohol was scratched out, and we wrote in narcotics or drugs or addiction, and because that's all we had to hold on to at the time, and it worked for that period of time. You know, it worked, and then all of a sudden, the spirit moved people along, and we have what we have today, and it was not through anything but a lot of consternation and foot dragging and bullying and a lot of people saying, well, we can't have that grade, we can't have that, and people trying to make it their thing, and here we are today, man, you know. And James Kennan was the man who, as Bill said, and as Terry alluded to as well, is the one that was singularly responsible, man, for the word getting out on a consistent basis, and it never changed, man. The tune didn't change. You call him up one time with one thing, and he'd tell you something, and the next time you call him up, the same thing. The tune didn't change. You know, it stayed consistent. And he was ethical, as Bill said. And there are many, many opportunities for him not to be. You know, many opportunities for him not to be. But he always, man, he stayed with the thing, man, and honesty is the best policy. And he practiced that, and he showed that to people that he interacted with. There's times, like Bill said, he aspired to be like Jimmy. And there's a lot of times I said, man, I'd like to be half the guy that he is and be able to live in my, stay in my integrity and do that consistently. Instead of in spurts, you know, get on these spiritual plateaus, and I'll be chanting up at the ashram, you know, and everything's going good, and 2 or 3 days later, man, I'm thinking, well, I can go to bankruptcy and screw these debtors that I have, and he wasn't like that. He wasn't wishy-washy like that, man. You know, he faced this thing right on, and by example, he showed us that no matter what comes down the pipe, that we can be the same. You know, and so we do owe a debt of gratitude. We do owe the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, those that have been around, to acknowledge Jimmy when we talk from a podium, if we do, or when we talk in the meeting, when we talk with newcomers, so that they know that what the real deal is, you know, instead of what somebody thinks it might have been, or what somebody told them, and I try to do that when I talk, is to give credit where credit's due. Now, he wouldn't want it. He wasn't looking for credit. You know, that was one of the things about his integrity that was good. He didn't buy into that, how great I am, because I did all this stuff. You know, he wasn't that kind of individual. So it is a lot to aspire to be, you know, and we can give that simple message of his humanness. Now, he wasn't the most perfect individual in the world, like nobody is. You know, if you subscribe to the Christian philosophy, there's only one perfect person. You know, I mean, I don't know whether that's right or not. I mean, I believe they believe that, but he was still a human being, and he was accountable, man. And that the way that he demonstrated that accountability, and the way he expressed that accountability, meant a lot to me, and still does.
Thanks. Fondest personal memory. Each one of you had a lot of contact with him. You know, can you recount to us what your fondest personal memory is?
I got to tell you something, right? I don't know what it is, my fondest one. Because I have a lot of memories of James Kennedy, right? This man was wide open as far as spirituality goes. He mentioned he went to the temple. Well, he used to go to the temple. It was kind of a Hindu temple, but kind of an all-face thing. And I would watch him, and what he would do, he would go and he would spend time. He didn't just go walk, look at a picture of all the so-called avatars or Christ or Buddha or something. I mean, he spent a little time in front of each one of them, worshiping all the aspects of God, but never talked, never told anybody do this, do that. But I used to watch this guy. I'd get bored watching him do that, you know. But that's not what I'm going to allude to, Ben. I'm going to allude to one time I had a breakup, a relationship breakup. I'm out in the middle of the streets hanging on to my balls, screaming into the air, ah! This guy that I was sponsoring drives by, sees me out there, you know, what the hell would do with me? He loads me in the car, takes me over to Jimmy's house, you know. And so, like we say, hey, it's not practical, it's not spiritual, right? He's telling me, Jesus, Bill, he says, I have a family here. He says, please stop screaming. He puts me on the couch, we're 20 minutes into this thing. And besides being that merchant seaman and all that, he was many, many years a roofer. Mm-hmm. He had extraordinarily strained hands, very strong, big, knobby fingers, man, like, kind of bony with these big knobs on there, man. And directly he dropped to his knees and he started beating me on the chest with these big hands, boom, 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 you know. And I'm going, you know. And he tells me, it's all right, Bill. It'll be worse next time. You know, I just went one more, you know. And that was it. It was over. And you know what? The next time it was worse. But I always, that came to my mind, I have to say. I don't know if that's the fond memory, but that one I remember many times, many times. You know, I'm sure there was a lot that were probably more meaningful, but that's a mind grabber, man. Yeah.
It's somewhat similar. And Nate said, I wasn't screaming and hollering and pulling what hair I had out of my head. Is I just had some what I considered at the time monumental experience, and I saw Jimmy, and I was recounting it to Jimmy, and he said, he looked at me, and he smiled, and he said, that ain't nothing. That's devastating, man, you know. And he said, because 2 months from now, or 2 weeks from now, or next year, you won't even remember what this experience was. It's so great right now, this minute. He says, because life is this moment, you know. And the next moment is going to bring something different. And what you thought's important right now is not going to be important the next moment. You know, and I thought about that often, you know. And I had something to say to him that was not worth really repeating here on tape. About that comment, because I thought at the time it like slammed me. You know, I mean, what do you mean if they, you know, this ain't nothing, because it was big to me at the time. But But it was an important lesson on how I look and view things, and how life is a continuum, and how it is embraced right now, this moment. He used to tell me all the time, embrace the moment, Jack. Embrace the moment, you know. If you don't embrace the moment, you're going to get in trouble. And how true, man. How true. And that's what I do today, man. Simple little things like that. But embrace the moment means so much today that I wouldn't even stop to consider it before, because I get up into the angst about, she told me to get out of the house, or whatever the heck it was. At the time, it was I got laid the night before, and I'd been out of the joint for about 3 months and hadn't had any action yet. You know, so of course that was a great experience. I just remember shaking his head and telling me, that ain't nothing, you know. And it was true. It wasn't nothing, and it did change.
I just think it was a time, like, I called up and I rant and raving about what was going on, a business meeting and whatever, and Jimmy just said, you know, just sit back and watch the cartoons, man. And just sit back and watch it. And it just, like, brought me right down. You know, I just started laughing. And from, like I said, from that day on, it's like the time to just sit back and watch the cartoons. Because a lot of it doesn't mean anything. A lot of it's all bullshit, you know, and a lot of it is keeping people clean, helping people get clean. All the business and stuff, it's like, a lot of it's just trivial stuff, you know, and the meat and the potatoes is reaching your hand out to somebody, you know, giving somebody a cup of coffee, you know, hugging somebody when they're crying. You know, the ability to bring you back to, like, reality. You know, what this thing is all about. And who we are, and, you know, what Jimmy's legacy was, you know. You know, and the time I got thrown off the New York region. You know, they conned and manipulated. I wasn't there. I was homesick. They threw me off. And, you know, I called up Jimmy again, and he... I said, I got thrown off the region. He was laughing. I was devastated. I was pissed off. I said, what the fuck are you laughing at? He said, I don't feel so all alone. And he started laughing. And I just said, okay. You know, it was like, it was no big thing after that. It was cool. He just, like, diffused me. You know, he had a knack of doing shit like that. And he was just like, it was nice. Just the love that man had for me and what I had for him, and just, like, it was great, man. And a lot of people wanted to be Jimmy Cannon, and they could never walk in his footsteps. Mm-hmm. So when they couldn't walk in his footsteps, they tried to cut him off at the ankles. Mm-hmm. You know, there was another fellowship in New York started, and my feelings are these people, like, when Jimmy wouldn't do what they wanted to do, they tried to discredit him. Trying to say that he wasn't the founder of Narcotics Anonymous, but this other person was, and they went on these tirades, and, you know, and for me, Jimmy Cannon is the founder of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, started in 1953, like Bill said, anything else, bullshit. Thanks.
The other thing Jimmy used to say in our basic text, the first line, in talking about our symbol, is simplicity is the key, and he was very much that way. He said, the more you complicate it, the worse it's going to get. This is not a complicated program. This is a very simple program. So keep it simple.
Well, since you brought up the NA symbol, how did it come into being? That was developed. How did it come into being, our NA symbol?
Well, Jimmy designed it. I don't know whether he had some help from Greg P. or not, because his surface, he had things that he did along the way on his own, and then at the proper time he would bring them forth. You see, and so maybe other people were working on committees or something, and they would think they're pretty. I was actually running a treatment center down in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, you know. And there was a guy that wrote a book, Thirst for Freedom, or something, some doctor. And you know, and the guy was great friends with Jimmy for many years, way back. And he used to always suggest to everybody, oh, you should read this book. This is one of the only squares that understand addiction. But suddenly here's this guy living like a little old man up in the hills above Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. And of course we had some NA meetings down there, but some guy went up there to live with this weirdo. And the guy's telling him, I made that design. I tell him, you're out of your goddamn mind, man, you know, right? Because I was there with a surface, but I mean, who actually sat down and drew the first circle with a diamond in it? I don't know, but I know that it wasn't born out of the hills of Jalisco, man.
And with that, I'd say the same thing. I think Greg had something to do with it. And there were some others. They had a committee, kind of an ad hoc committee that was working on different things. But the original design was of Jimmy's and how the points meet and what they all indicate. But I'm sure this weekend that Gene or somebody can probably illuminate on that more than myself or Bill. But it was done basically for Jimmy.
Well, I'm a baby here. I only got 24 years playing. My understanding is that Jimmy did it on one of his bouts of illness, and he was in the hospital, and he worked on the symbol and the
colors. Oh, you know what? You're correct.
And Jimmy, that was Jimmy's, you know, and Jimmy, you know, they have people that say, well, they're the father of the basic text, you know, and it's like the basic text was written by the fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was many addicts to put in, but I helped on the book. You know, it doesn't make me the founder or the father. You know, it's just like it was done by professional addicts for addicts. And I'll tell you something, that literature crew, I mean, they had some of the ragtag motherfuckers I've ever seen in my life in that literature crew. You know, but it came about, they traveled all over the country, but, you know, Jimmy designed that symbol. That was Jimmy's when he did it, my understanding, when he was sick in the hospital.
Yeah, you jogged my mind there, and I do recall it was when he was in that confinement for TV, and I do remember him telling me that.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And all
right.
Colors
yeah.
meant something different.
Yeah,
right.
You know. That's,
and then it came surface sometime around the the
NA3
or the basic, when obviously when the basic text was here.
Yeah, when I think it was...
But you're correct about it happening in the hospital because
yeah.
he told me that himself. When you said that, it came back in my head.
Thanks. Next question. This is just anybody like to answer this one, and this is just your impression after being here for so many years and seeing so much, especially around the controversies that pop up. You have a big controversy. We have controversies in areas all the time. And what would you answer to us if I asked you, you know, what is important to remember about any controversy that comes up at this fellowship at any given time? And how to handle that.
Well, it's really weird because today as I was listening to somebody speak down there, you know, writing a few things down, and I wrote this down. I said, controversy in the program, okay. Outside controversy is a break in our traditions. And Jimmy used to say that over and over and over. That we could agree to disagree, that we can have all the internal controversy we wanted to, as long as it wasn't about breaks and traditions and things like that, you know? And that's the controversy.
I think it's the basic thing, and it's about recognizing that as a growing, maturing fellowship, and with the strong personalities that come in and try to dominate and change the flow to be to their liking, that we need to recognize that we have to stop and pray, and we have to ask for divine intervention sometimes, and sometimes to keep our mouth shut, and sometimes not, and to agree to be disagreeable, and to remember that just maybe I might be wrong. You know, there's a possibility you're wrong. You know, your argument sounds good, but you might be wrong. I usually didn't want to accept that, right? But we're going to have it, man. You know, the best meetings I've seen almost in the world have been meetings that started out of a hot resentment that one little faction had against another. So they split and went and started their own darn meeting, and it turned out to be a good meeting. The other meeting they split from turned out to be a good meeting, and everybody was happy in the long run. Although it didn't seem at the time that there was a basis to have some kind of meaningful resolution to it, it turned out meaningful anyway, because the split was practical and therefore spiritually manifested. You know, and...
I just think it's the nature of the beast of addiction, and, you know, the secondary phase of our disease is big shotitis. You know, I know better, and that's why we have through conscience, and they put a bunch of us maniacs in a business meeting, and we have a conscience, you know, because we all know what's best for the fellowship. I do, he does, you do. You know, and that's why we got so many goddamn basic texts. You know, if they could, they, you know, you get some more newcomers in there, and they say, well, I don't like it, and everybody wants to change it, and, you know, it's just the nature of the beast. We're like controversial people, and we want our way. We're like spoiled brats, you know, and we want to change things, and we want to leave our legacy. You know, I did this, you know, instead of, you know, if it works, don't fix it, you know, it's just, we're nuts. A lot of, you know, it's just getting in business meeting, and, you know, I think a lot of it is bringing it back to, like, this consensus thing that we're doing now, and a lot of reasons in there, I think is a real good thing, where if you get a good facilitator, and you can bring it back to why we're here, how we're going to help the addicts, our primary purpose, and it's not about conning and manipulation and Robert's rule. It's about the spiritual principles of this program and our traditions, and how can we help? You know, not that your idea is better or my idea is better. What's the common good for the fellowship? And if we always, like, center ourselves, bring us back into the spiritual path of why we're sitting there. Not that your idea is better than mine, and I'm going to fight you, and I know Robert's rules better than you, and I'm going to beat the shit out of you with those rules. You know, and it's just how we can just keep on that straight and narrow path, how we can help the sick and suffering addict, and nobody shall die, sick and recovered. You know, and that's the beauty of this program, and that's if we could always maybe stop when we get in crazy controversy and just say a prayer, you know. You know, it's just our nature. We're willful people, self-centered. I know better than you, you know, and that's how we get into it. And we have a lot of fanatics in our fellowship, you know, and every organization has fanatics, and fanatics, they want their way no matter what, and they will go in any direction to get it. You know, we just got to be aware of that and try to bring it back into the fellowship of the spiritual
path.
Thanks. If that made any sense.
Well, That's all the questions I have. Anybody else have any questions?
Well, I have one.
You got it.
Well, when I first went to meetings in 1980, there was zero literature, but I do seem to remember something that looked sort of like a mimeograph pamphlet. And then a couple of years later, there was a little white book, and by 84, there was actually a basic text. Who wrote that little mimeograph pamphlet?
Which one?
Well, all I remember about it is that gnome was always running. I mean, that doesn't say much, but that was the line that stuck with me.
I don't know.
I'm not familiar with that piece. There was, where was this at?
San Francisco.
See, that's strange because in San Francisco, at that time, Bobby Berg was there and others, and Bobby was working on, and he was working on the Honor Lit Review Committee then for the basic text. Him and Steve Bice from Sonoma County were in Northern California, and I think Sylvia, she was over in the East Bay, and I think she had some input into it too. So they are working on it, so they may have had kind of like a working copy that some people in the San Francisco area put together that was then sent to the office, which collated all this stuff in order to go into the basic text. Then they went and redlined stuff and excluded a bunch of input so they get the first copy of the basic text out. And I think that's what you're referring to, because
either out of the stories.
Well, it could have been the stories, but there are copies around this weekend of different old literature, you know, that you may see or may not, I don't know whether you'll see it or not, you may see it, and of before we had stories in the white book, and the first white book with stories, it's floating around somewhere this weekend. You might get a chance to see it, and because the first pamphlet went through a number of different, like, type of, the front page, the cover. The cover was changed a lot, but the first eight pages were the same. You know, it just came out of, they just came out of in different periods.
And
they had different address and phone number in the front. And there was even one that used to be in the World Service case, which is not strange enough in Miracles Happen. You know, that was in the World Service archive case, and it had no address on the front. And it's exactly the same as all the other eight-page ones, except the front page was different, and they got printed by different printers, and different things happened, and they just and didn't have that. In fact, they had some that had typos in them in our reading release in the meeting, and in How It Works, there was some major typos, and people would read it. They sounded strange, but they read them anyway, you know. And so, but what you're talking about is probably was a working copy of that group, because there were some people that worked with Bobby on with
Bobby
that, and I know, and Steve Bice was living up in Sonoma County at the time, and there was. There's another guy, Phil, something that was up there at the time, and so they were kind of a working committee on the first edition of Basic Text. In fact, Steve and Bobby's name is on the front page of it as people that contributed to it of the first Basic Text.
One thing that might have been missed in the beginning was, I'm not sure who said it, but that, you know, what a shame it is that it hasn't been a history of this fellowship, of this fellowship written, and who would be able to verify information today and soon. So what I guess what I'm wondering is, why do you think that hasn't happened? you know, the justice gospel in the closet, and so what's the value of events like this, and but specifically to somebody just coming in, like what's the value of something like this to the person who has, you know, walks in the door for the first time?
Well, for one, and Terry can address it after I do. For one, it gives them some feel for what the initial struggles were. So they know that when they come into meeting now and they see a basic text and they say it works out and why, they see a step guide and they see our 24-hour day book and they see all of this 20-plus IPs, that how did that get there, man? Did it just fall out of the sky? You know, no, it's through a lot of hard work and anguish and name-calling and people being called out in meetings and, you know, and various and sundry other actions that weren't, quote, spiritual in nature. And so it was born out of a collective experience that included all those different personality types. And so it's important. I've always felt a sense of loss that years ago, and I'm talking now, back in 1984, when not only me, but a number of other NA members gave a lot of information to World Service Office because they were allegedly, through Bob Stone, going to do a definitive history text. You know, and there was a lot of protagonists. It had a vested interest, for whatever reason, in not seeing that happen. And so here we are, you know, 50 years old, and we don't have a definitive history text. What we have is some information to some other people outside of Narcotics Anonymous, published without fellowship approval, and they're continuing to collect information, some of which that they got illegally, you know, and we have people who, and you got other people, they just don't want to see the truth. They don't want to give tribute to what happened. In some of the players that were rather controversial in the beginning, they were like kind of maybe a little left of center, but they were important to the growth of Narcotics Anonymous because their spirit was part of our fabric at that time, even though they've long since passed, and that didn't have an interest in not seeing that happen. So all the information that they collated was right after Jimmy was given the boot, you know, and they're going to write, they're going to write a history text, they're going to have to tell the truth about that. So since they don't want to tell the truth about that, name names, then what do you got? And Bob Stone did his book, you know, and some of it's factual and some of it's just his spin, you know, but it's certainly not a definitive text on our history, and because it's just not, you know, it was written with the perspective of somebody who was not a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm not taking away, he did a lot of good as far as bringing some organization to the office and putting some stuff in place that was probably, for the most part, beneficial to our growth. But he was not, and he's one that I believe that had a vested interest in not seeing one develop. You know, I mean, it's, I don't know, it gets me, that thing really gnaws at me at times that it's not there, you know, and it could have been easily, you know, it could have been easy. And because they have this stupid thing now of, well, you got to go through the literature, so this fellowship approved, you got to go through this hocus pocus and all that. Well, Miracle Tappan didn't go through no literature review process, but they're selling the World Service Office. They put that out within a few weeks of the San Jose Conference Convention, toward that 27, WCNA 27, and it was hastily done. You know, I think a lot of it's
reasonably good, you know, is not totally accurate. Not to say if we develop the history text, maybe we'd be totally accurate. The problem today is the people, man, that have all the information, man, they're leaving us, man. We've had a lot of people die recently that were instrumental in our early fabric, man. You know, when they're all gone, then what do you got? You're still out there barking in the wind, you know, to use a crude expression.
Can I ask one more question?
Okay.
Well, Jack and everybody else, this thing we're doing here right now is going to be a primary document. We are in an unusual situation in that some of the people who wrote the literature and founded the fellowship are still alive. We should have done this 12 years ago, I agree, or even 20, but we're doing it right now. Is there anything you want to make sure gets on the record? If there is, you can say it here and there.
Well, I think, you know...
We've already agreed, by the way, to make these recordings available unedited.
Oh, yeah, I think that's the way it should be.
Okay.
No hidden agendas, nothing under the table. Yeah. You see, I go back to what Jimmy used to tell me way back when, right? You see, there was a request, for instance, for somebody to come here and want to sell some historical things. You know, what the hell are there? Historical things are tapes or videos or whatever from some other effort. But the situation was when I was asked my advice about it, I said, well, it sounds good, except what is the agenda? I mean, is this money that's going into personal profits? By what authority? Do they come from a region? Are they representing a committee? You know, what is the vibe? You know, much like we were talking last night over there about financial viability and accounting for the entire fellowship from the meetings on up. So when you talk about literature, you know, the World Service Office and the conference doesn't have the final say on all literature. Each group is autonomous. You could do whatever you want as long as it comes from an NA thing. All you have to do is say this comes from the Friday night meeting of the extemporaneous group of Tallahassee, Missouri or something, you know. And if the fellowship buys it and they like it, that's fine. If it comes from the fellowship, at whatever level, I'm in agreement with it. It's all about somebody wants to write a personal book and put money in his pocket. Well, then let them take that book to the Dalton Bookstore or who in the hell ever sells private books and put it on the market. You see what I mean? And do it, but do it not within the confines or representative of our thing. I mean, hey. There's probably somebody out here that'll take an interest in anything in the world. They write a book about it. You know? Some outsider could sit here and look at us and not even be a member of it. They could write a book about it. It may be correct, may not be correct. But anything that we want to present to be factual, et cetera, like that, you know, it should come within the program guidelines, which are much, much broader than what people think. Okay? I mean, we can write a book, put a book together, but then the money should come for the addicts, not to put in somebody's pocket, not to pay some executive director $100,000 a year for a $20,000 a year job.
Well, I thought that was pretty clear in our tradition, so... Mm-hmm. It might be funny that way, but I mean, is there any other missing history? You've already been correcting the record about Jimmy. Is there any other missing history that you always wish you could make sure somebody had a chance to refer to that you saw personal?
Well, I think that probably that I haven't seen it floating around. As a matter of fact, I think this is really the first conference that I have seen or been involved in that's about NA to CNA. The last 10 years has been all about what in the hell went on in New York and what went on over. I mean, to me, they were breaking the traditions right and left. And some junkie priest and Leavenworth Penitentiary and yada, yada, yada. Didn't have anything. I see this as the first honest effort like this and the first recognition of our founder, whereas before we've been dealing with hidden agendas, subterfuge, and part of those hidden agendas and things like that have been about personal property and personal gain. But doing it this way, hey, it's an open book to the fellowship, and I think a continuum of what's going on right now is what's necessary. We may be 50 years into this thing, but you know, better late than sorry. You see?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, that's how we're doing it.
When you were talking about what's good about this, the people coming in, you know, behind us or the newcomers today, this way they can get our history. You know, they can understand that one time we didn't have places to meet. You know, we were destitute. Nobody wanted us. Nobody even believed an addict could recover. We were scum of the earth. And, you know, just our history showing the growth of the fellowship and show the struggles we went through and the pitfalls we went through and why the history hasn't been done for this. A lot of people didn't want to recognize Jimmy Cannon was the founder. There were certain people, you know, money, power, and prestige. Prestige is there. A lot of people wanted it to be the glory, you know, that we have, like, families in Narcotics Anonymous with heads of families, like monarchs of sponsorship families. You know, there's people with all these agendas that, like, they would have loved to be in Jimmy's shoes. They would have loved to walk his walk, but they couldn't. So if they couldn't, they try to steal it. They try to discredit it. You know, I think it's just human nature. You know, it's just the same reason we stuck needles in our arms and smoked crack and all that is to get loaded. You know, some people get loaded on power, prestige, glory. You know, look at the great me. You know, this is a self-centered program. And then people just didn't want to recognize Jimmy for who he was. You know, and you can't take it away from him. You know, there's people who wrote, you know, books about the story of the basic text. You know, it's got nothing to do with our fellowship. You know, and it's just like, they're like people that wanted what they couldn't have. You know, you can't steal the truth. And the truth was Jimmy was the founder. You know, and all that stuff about, you know, New York, narcotics, and that's got nothing to do with our fellowship and nothing to do with our history. You know, the base of the history is so the truth gets out on the table so we don't make the same mistake, so we continue to be a spiritual program. You know, there's a lot of dead bodies out there that, or dirty laundry that people that have time, they don't want their dirty laundry stirred up. They'd rather not hear this. Even though we haven't mentioned any names, when they hear these tapes, I know their goddamn bellies are going to flip.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to think, well, yeah, when are they going to name me? When's my name? When are they going to... You know, we could sit here last night, we were naming them off. I can't do that because it wouldn't be spiritual. You know? But they're out there. You know, and
they're here this weekend.
They're here this weekend, man. You know, it's just like some fanatics.
Well, and with what? Maybe we'll end up interviewing them, too.
Yeah, you will.
I'm lucky they won't name names, neither.
You know, but the thing is, it's like, we want our history, and we want to see this flower called Narcotics Anonymous to bloom and flourish and be fertilized and nurtured and caressed and taken care of. You know, we want the best for this fellowship. We just want the history and we want Jimmy Cannon to get his due. How many newcomers know who Jimmy Cannon is? You know, nobody knows what the legacy of the man, what he did, how many hours he stayed up. How many crazy bastards like me talked to you until 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning?
Well, you know, 19 years ago even, and I didn't hear people talking about him by name all that much, just because
it seemed, well, maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed to me that in NA there was no room for personalities. Well, I can't put this right. But I mean, I knew some of the people you've been talking about, and maybe they just didn't want to talk to a newcomer, but they might mention Jimmy, but, well, there was no controversy about who founded what. What was it worth to anybody to try to take charge of what?
Well, there was some confusion, man, because they probably see people for the first time. You got to understand, we came from an era, like I said. See, how many people know that when they called up and made a request for literature, mm-hmm. that it started with a search in a dumpster for a goddamn cardboard box to send it to them, and you got 10,000 requests, and now that you got a box and you got stuff in a box, where in the hell is the stamp coming from? You know what I mean? See?
And Jimmy didn't get a salary.
So, all these things, but you see, there were people that they saw, were of a different mind, they're educated, they came from a different process, and maybe they had more business savvy or something, you know, and they saw, oh, we can sell this book for $10 a piece, and there's 42,000 people who are going to do it, and they calculated out, oh, I can have a job and make $100,000 a year. Well, these people are not going to come in here and cop out. They're going to come in here and they're going to maybe say something, but they're not going to cop out. But they know who they are. But what's happened is through the 20 years that you say you've been around and all that, hell, I went to a convention one time, the one we talked about last night, where some guy jumped out the window.
Yeah, in San Diego.
He wasn't part of our fellowship, and squatters, some guy taking cocaine or something.
Yeah, it's like Mod Nuts.
And he jumped out of a 20-story window and squatted right in our feet, you know. But anyway, at that same convention, I had a picture that lady gave me, Betty Kennan, a personal picture, a little snapshot of him on a ferry boat in front of the Statue of Liberty, which was very fitting. He didn't pose for it, because he rode by, somebody snapped a picture, and if he saw the damn thing, he'd take it and tear it up. That's the kind of guy he was. So I had this thing, I went and I had 5 or 6 copies made of it. I went to this convention, and they happened to call up that day and say, hey, these pictures you ordered are ready. So I had them in the back of my car, all in a nice frame, with, I don't know what, 2 feet high, and foot and a half wide or something, and I, nice, beautiful picture, you know. And it occurred to me, I was, everybody was waiting in line for the dinner, for the banquet, and I went to the guy and I told him, I said, hey, do you think, I just happened to think I have these pictures in the back seat of my car, do you think I should take one and put it here so as everybody walks by, they'll say, who is that? And they'll say, maybe they'll fix a little thing with the marks a lot. And say, you know, the founder of NA, you know. And the son of a bitch told me, we don't worship demigods. I went, oh my God. You know, boy, it really fractured me. But that's the kind of mentality that you have going. You had a lot of subterfuge. Mm-hmm. You got to understand that addicts and alcoholics, they're all con artists, thieves, you know, we were not the nicest people in the world, you know what I mean? See? We even slithered it in and stole a lot from some other fellowship. See? So the thing is that we have grown. We have come of age. Enough people have asked the question personally out here. You see what I mean? The truth is now known. And you guys, I commend you so highly. I commend you to the end of time, man, because you know what? This is the first real effort. It's going to be different from here on out. It really will. You see, this is the basis, the truth, it's spoken. The people know that all their bullshit was bullshit, and it's dead and stinking, and the people ain't buying that concept anymore. The truth is out. So we go from here.
We don't dwell on the problem. Our program teaches us not to dwell on the problem, but to work on the solution. Right? And this is it. This right here, be the solution. Not with me, Bill Beck, or Jack, or Harry, or whatever you know. It's what, hey, the whole conglomerate of it, the whole unity of us coming together. Yeah. Get some people in and let them yada, yada, yada. And you know what? Their goddamn lies are going to stand out like a sore on their thumb. You know what I mean? If they lie. Or maybe they'll just finally suck wind and go along with things the way they're really supposed to have been going all the time, like Terry said, you know. Hey, this is it. You guys brought it forth, you know what I mean? You are the instrument, you know. You're God's tool here to do this job and to carry it out. And I'm happy to be part of it. Tickle pink. Tickle pink. I didn't know whether I was coming to this place to fight a war or to have a healing or to be with some unity. But you know what? I came here and it's beautiful. You people are beautiful. There's no war. There's no hashing. You know what? They're all tired of fighting too. The other side, we're tired of fighting. The other side's tired of fighting too, man. The war is over. Let's go forth. You know? That aspect of the NA war is over. That's part of the history. But you guys that see it and have heard it, you write it, you carry it forth. You know what I mean? That's your thing. We're the old senior deacons, you know what I mean? And you come to ask, and this is, you know, we fought that war. You got to take it from here, man. You be the youngsters.
You know, go on, you know, let the past die. You know, what Jack said about the white book, when they changed the white book, I personally liked all the changes. That's me. And I was hanging out the what were you guys called?
Minority boys.
And I was hanging out with them, and I liked all the changes, but I didn't like the way they changed it. They never sent it out to the fellowship, said, do you want us to change the white book? They just said, these are the changes, and they voted on it. You know, it never went out to the groups. You know, it was underhanded stuff like that. And in the past, there was a lot of manipulation. And I was on a conference floor, and I seen this guy from New York sell his vote. He sold his vote to get a position. This is the deals they used to cut. You know, it was just like, you think Capitol Hill has some sleazy bastards. Man, Narcotics Anonymous, we had them all. You know, and it's changing. The World Service Conference is evolving. Thank God, it's becoming a more spiritual place. But we had that stuff going on. This is, you know, our nature of the addict. They would bend you over for the good of NA. You know, and it's just, let's not have this anymore. Let's have a spiritual program. Let's do things spiritually, you know. Let's not be at each other's throats. You know, what happened, happened. We just want to let people know what happened so it doesn't happen again. You know, and just Jimmy gets his due. Jimmy is whoever he was. He was the flaming Narcotics Anonymous, man.
Shut the fuck up.
There's an old addict that says, if I quote him correctly, that if you don't learn from your history, you're doomed to repeat.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the important parts to our history. I think we missed this on the first. I need to say this again.
Yeah, would you please?
Yeah. This is the 50th Anniversary History Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, October 3rd to the 5th, 2003. The recordings from this conference belong to the public domain, and the speakers that we've had here are Terry Ryder and Jack White and Bill Beck. And I appreciate you guys spending the time with us and sharing about what you remember and what you know.
Thank you very much.
And I really appreciate you saying Bill Beck, because I've been looking for this guy Bill D for years. I don't know
who the hell he is.
And just when you get there, you just hear.
They think you're a flat jack.